are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
I'm your host for our Finding Your Forte talk radio show. We are excited to have Janine Lewis as our guest for today, and we'll come back and give you all the good skinny on her in just a second. But first of all, I just want to welcome you all to, I think, what is our seventh or eighth show of Finding Your Forte, where we have an opportunity to talk with professionals who are in pursuit of purpose in their business and in their career. And we have the opportunity to share those experiences in a way that allow you to chronicle and be inspired and hear the triumphs and the challenges and all of the ebbs and flows, nooks and crannies of that journey. In a lot of ways, purpose is really about a journey more so than it is about a destination. And so I have always found it really encouraging to hear stories from client to client that we're working with, to be able to connect the dots between them and allow them to have experiences where they share with each other. Today, we're going to talk quite a bit about rewriting the rules, mostly because that is a message that's coming from Janine that we're in the process of kind of capturing it as it comes from her, and what to do in the face of disruption. And there's a lot of expertise that she brings to this topic because of what she does professionally and how she's been able to apply that more broadly. So I just want to say thank you, Janine, for joining us, and a hearty welcome this morning. See our beautiful skyline of Atlanta, and it looks like it's going to be a great weather day today. Yeah, another one. But thank you, Janine. Welcome. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll give you a little bit of the behind the curtains scoop on Janine. She is has a phenomenal presence in settings like this, but it's always interesting to watch her pretend that she doesn't enjoy them. And I don't know why that is. We're still trying to unpack that, but today we're going to have a little fun with it. Right. And so she's like the you know, the movies where they always start with the little girl in the choir who's barely eking out a note, and then by the end of the movie, she is this big diva superstar. That's the evolution we're gonna have happen with you.
Except
it's gonna be across the course of one conversation today, and not a whole movie.
No pressure. Thank you for setting that expectation.
So there's so much that I can do to introduce you, but I want to give you the privilege of going first. So would you please introduce to our listeners Janine?
Okay. I am Janine Lewis. I am a New York native, but an Atlanta dweller. I've been here.
Which borough?
From Queens.
Queens?
Yeah, I'm a city girl.
Okay.
I've been here for the better part, really more than half my life at this point, but New York is home. But Atlanta is where I grew up. I work professionally as an organizational change management consultant. So I kind of live in a space of disruption.
Okay.
Now
you're talking to me when you talk about organizational change management consultant, because we both have been doing that for over 20 years.
Yeah.
However, for folks that don't get the opportunity to live and breathe with the brilliance of of your kind of practitioners, can you tell a little bit more about what organizational change management consultants do?
So if I'm going to give you a technical official definition or a description of it, realistically, I try to prepare organizations and teams for changes that are going to occur in their workplace, typically as a result of a business change, a systems change, something like that. There's something that is going to happen that is going to require the organization to work differently. And it's my job to prepare them for what that difference looks like, whether it's through training or communications, coaching, counseling, or any combination of those things.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. That's a really good technical. Consulting has always been the thing that's really difficult when people ask you, hey, what do you do? And you tell them consulting and they still look glazed over.
Yeah.
So that actually is a really illustrative explanation. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Other times when people ask me, I tell them I try to get grown folks to do stuff they don't really want to do.
Well, you know what? That's the layman's version.
That's the layman's version. Because, I mean, in reality, right, that's what it is.
Right.
Grown folks don't want to do. We're grown and good and grown and stuck in our patterns and our ways. And so we don't want to do the new stuff that particularly this random third party is coming in to ask us to do. We don't want to do it.
Right. Okay. So I kind of interrupted you in the middle of so continue to give us this guided tour through your career. So, you know, your organizational change management consultant.
Organizational change management consultant. I've worked with both companies, large and small, locally and throughout the country.
Okay.
I've had a pretty diverse client base, everything from railroads and manufacturing companies to, you know, big name, big box stores and kind of everything in between. And that's afforded me a really unique opportunity because as a consultant, I get to go in and see a lot of things, meet a lot of people, and experience a lot of different environments and cultures and settings. And all of those differences always bring me back to kind of that same point that, yes, change is constant, but nobody likes it. Nobody wants to do
it. Wow. Okay.
So it always kind of makes what I do really interesting because a lot of times you go in and you think there's really going to be something different about it, and it's not. It's really, there are some common things and some common themes, I guess, that you find in every space. So that's kind of the fun of it, trying to peel apart and unpack it all and figure out what those commonalities are.
What a fascinating life to live, though, where you are the champion or the agent or in a lot of ways the, you know, the engineer of change happening, particularly from a people perspective. So you get the opportunity to see waves of change hit organizations. It's the thing that continues to see, you know, improvements, market performance, growth, you know, individual and organizational capabilities start to flourish, hopefully, and thrive. So you probably have great stories and experiences of successes and then some things that, you know, failures that didn't work as well. All that wrapped up in your expertise that you bring and put on the table every time you do, you navigate another one.
I do. All of that is true. I've learned to stop calling them failures and call them opportunities.
Okay.
Just learn that.
Okay.
But you do see the successes. And I think the fun of it is, you know, everybody says I'm different. Every organization you go into, they say I'm different. We do things differently. We're not the same. These things don't apply to us, but at the end of the day, every client is trying to serve a market. Every client is trying to serve a customer. They're trying to sell a good or a service or a product, and they're trying to be the best at what they're doing. And whenever somebody says, well, we do it differently, well, you might have a couple more steps or a couple more layers, but at the end of the day, you're still trying to get to the same end result.
Yeah.
The thing I find often most interesting is the challenges don't necessarily always come from the business that's in play or the processes or the changes that are being introduced, but the challenges come from the people that are being asked to make these changes. And not that they are challenged in and of themselves, but there are usually a lot of other things that are underlying some of the pushback that I get. So that's usually when I start to have the most fun, when I can unpack those things and figure out why this resistance is there, what the bigger issue really is.
Okay. One of the things that I think is really helpful is to understand really kind of the least common denominator for a person going through a change. And so if you think about the waves of people that are impacted by the changes that you're driving, and shortly here we'll pivot this to kind of where you are currently, but in a lot of ways I think this helps to encapsulate this body of expertise you bring.
Okay.
So think about, you know, the on an individual level, the people that have been impacted by the change, like what is their state of mind when before you even start doing your thing, before, like, what typically, you know, like, what kinds of emotions are you dealing with, or realities that they're processing through? Like, what, how would you describe, you know, in marketing, we use this concept of an avatar,
mm-hmm.
right, which is meant to be a hypothetical illustration of a person that you're going to bring something to, in a lot of cases, offerings or professional services. So what's the avatar for a person that's going, that's about to encounter the kind of change that you bring?
It really depends.
Okay.
And I hate to give that answer because it sounds, you know, really sort of generic.
Okay.
But there are some people that no matter what you say, what kind of changes they're going through, some people are going to be completely on board and eager and excited. And those are the people that you always love to have on your team because they're going to be the champions. But in a lot of cases, there are people that most times it's reluctance or fear or hesitation. It's, again, goes back to what I mentioned earlier about saying, you know what, we're different and this doesn't apply to me and I don't need to do this. And so there's often a little bit of reluctance and sometimes a little bit of standoffishness. Often because I come in as a third party. I'm usually not a member of the team. I'm usually brought in by decision makers that want, you know, a neutral third party perspective. And so I get a lot of resistance with people saying, you don't know us, you don't know my business, you don't know. And I tell them all the time, I'm not an expert in your field. And I don't necessarily want to be, but I'm an expert in what I do. And so what I want to do is figure out as much as I can about your business and bring my expertise to bear, and then let's figure out how we can meet in the middle and get us to where we need to be.
How fascinating. I think that the thing when I think about people that are going through, I mean, in a lot of ways, we've been in very similar scenarios, you know, where you've been really focused on the people and organizational side of change. In a lot of cases with me, it's been either the strategies or the processes or even the systems of change. You know, one thing that the common thread, I think, which is a good kind of lynch point for our conversation, is these people are about to have some major disruption. You don't usually come around just the whole hands and sing kumbaya. Right, you usually are bringing about the message that there's going to be a disruption of some sort, and it could be a good disruption or it could be a bad disruption. But indeed, it is a disruption, and that's the reason why I wanted to focus on that is mostly because, I mean, in some ways, it's a leading, you know, comment because in our conversations that have been evolving and unfolding over the years, over the last couple of years that we've been working together. It's helping people through that disruption that I see as the common thread between what you have been focused on professionally and the work that you're feeling called to do with people individually. You're chuckling. Why are you chuckling at me?
Because I'm chuckling for a couple of reasons.
Okay.
One, because every time I sit down and have a conversation with you, I cannot believe the things that you convinced me to talk about. I'm just going to be very transparent about that. I can't believe that.
Well, this is a really transparent show.
It's a very transparent show. I laugh, too, because, you know, as I think very quickly over the time, we have talked about this for years, and you have pushed and nudged, and I think I've been a little bit reluctant to even really kind of call it out and own it and pull it out in terms of what it is, because it is a very transparent thing and it is a very personal thing, not just for me, but for anybody that's experiencing any sort of disruption. And so it's kind of like you know the answer to the question, but you just pray that no one asks you the question.
Wow.
So you don't necessarily have to lie.
That is profoundly transparent,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
answer.
I really, I think that's a really great way to
yeah.
to capture. You know the answer, but you just
pray
like nobody
nobody's
asks
gonna ask you
yeah.
the question, because
yeah.
when you do answer the question, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to hold back. You have to unfold. And so to your point, what I do professionally is I introduce disruption, but I try to manage the disruption as much as I can. The disruption sometimes, as you said, can be great. It can be, you know, exciting, and it's going to propel a group or team or an organization to another level. On the other side, it can be, you know, really hard and really negative, because people are going to be impacted in some way by some sort of loss or some sort of something. And for a lot of people, that's the hard part. And the disruption, you know, what I've started to notice in, you know, both personally and professionally, is it's that disruption that is really the issue. And for a lot of times, in a lot of cases, the disruption is, you know, the result of, you know, I did everything I was supposed to do. I did everything right. I did, you know, we as a company did everything we thought we were going to do. How come we're not winning in the marketplace? How come we're having to let resources go? For individuals or teams that are impacted, I checked all the boxes. I took all the training. I, you know, didn't take the vacation times. I did all the stuff I was supposed to do that was going to make me successful. Why am I still being impacted by the disruption? And then, you know, personally, there are people that have checked the boxes, that have done all the things, the shoulds and the supposed tos. And, you know, you and I kind of lived in that space for a long time, but it's the shoulds and the supposed tos when you stop focusing on what those things are that you, and you check the box, you realize that, you know what, something else is happening here. I've got to figure something else out. What is that? And so, again, it's often the result of disruption, but how did I get here? What do I do now?
Yeah, that is worth echoing because, I mean, here you are, and I'm going to, you know, if you're uncomfortable with the transparency, you're about to get real uncomfortable because we're about to go really, really personal. But here you are, right? You are this ambassador for change, driving, managing, introducing the, you know, hey, this wave of disruption is coming, and I'm here to get you ready. You've done that throughout your career. And then in a really profound way, in from a personal perspective, you then flip on what side of the table you are on, and you're no longer the person that's bringing in the disruption, but you're the person that the disruption is happening to.
Yeah.
So talk a bit about what that experience was like. Now, go ahead. Come on, laugh it out, because we're gonna go be better as a result of this. But talk about what that experience is like, having that disruption happen for you and how you handled it with your expertise on managing through disruption.
Sure. So some people would say I've been, you know, really kind of lucky because I haven't had, you know, major waves of, you know, challenges and issues, and I'm blessed for that. I know that. Really much of what I've experienced is common every day. It's what somebody is dealing with in one way or another every day right this minute. But for me, I've had two major issues or events or instances, maybe is the right word, of disruption. So I guess it was in 2008 when the economy turned, I suffered a job loss, which I had never not had a job. Mm-hmm. I went from college to graduate school and went into jobs and, you know, landed with great companies and had great experiences and often found myself in places that really, frankly, I should not have been.
Mm-hmm.
But they were great experiences and they taught me a lot. I learned a lot. I kind of, you know, it was kind of like, you know, you just kind of sneak in and you're sitting there and you're looking around like, somebody is going to come and ask me to get my stuff and go because they are going to realize that I'm not supposed to be here. But instead of that, I kept getting invitations to return. So I found myself sitting, you know, with very senior people in very important settings, learning a lot of things that I didn't realize I was going to need later on, but just kind of being in awe, like, they're going to find me out. You know, I spent a lot of time every day thinking these folks are going to really figure out that I'm making this up as I go along, and they're going to ask me to get a box and get all my little goodies and go. And all those things that really served me, though, I learned to work hard. I learned to be resourceful. I learned to utilize my resources. So I did all the things. I took all the trainings. I took advantage of all the things that were available to me professionally. I took the jobs nobody wanted. I made the moves nobody wanted to do. I didn't take the vacations when they were offered because there were things that I felt like I needed to do, you know, for the needs of the business, because those were the phrases that you heard. And those were behaviors that I had, you know, at every company that I had been at. And then all of a sudden, the economy turned and there really was not such a great demand for my specific skill set and my services. And suddenly I was, you know, in a place where I didn't have a job and I really didn't know what that looked like and what I was going to do. And it frightened me. It embarrassed me, to be very honest, because, you know, again, I had checked the boxes. I went to college and got a degree. That's what I was told to do. Go to school, get a job. You know, I did that, got the degree, decided, you know what, I should get a graduate degree because I needed to do that. Should take as much additional training and enhancement as I could. So I did all those things, checked the boxes, looked back at my role, if you will, and looked at, yep, check that box, check that box, check that box, did what I was supposed to do. And when it came down to it and everybody was saying, okay, well, you know, if we're going to have to make some changes, no one said Janine did the things that she was supposed to do, so we should keep her. Mm-hmm. They said, this is what the climate is calling for and this is what we have to do. So yeah, I was devastated because it's what I knew. It was according to the rules and the guidelines that I had always followed, and that's what I did. So, you know, I thankfully rebounded from that, found myself back in a position where I was doing some different things and still very close to the work that I'm doing now that I've grown to love so much. And things were looking up and doing really well. And then several years later, I had a personal impact wherein a marriage that I was in ended rather abruptly. And again, I followed, you know, the rules according to the things that I was supposed to do, the things that I should do, right? You find someone that you know, have commonalities with and you like, and you are, you know, you become friends and you date and you do all these things. You build a life, you check the box, you get married. And I didn't marry the first boy that asked me. I didn't, you know, do all the things that you know, everybody else did or some people did. I kind of followed what I thought was the rule book. And again, when that ended, I was stopped dead in my tracks. I was, again, frankly devastated because I did the things I should and I was supposed to. And I know I keep repeating those things, but to me, I didn't realize that those were the underlying currents or that was the underlying course of my life for a really long time. I did a lot of the things that I felt like I should do or I was supposed to do. And there was a lot of pressure with that. So the shoulds and the supposed tos, frankly, were wearing me out. But I didn't know this, and I've said this to you, and I don't know if you acknowledge this. I didn't realize it. I didn't realize that I was living in the shoulds and supposed tos until I was in a conversation with you. And it may have been our very first conversation, and I didn't realize it. I didn't know. So you and I met very shortly after the end of that marriage. And I was in a very heightened emotional state. And I came to you at the recommendation of a friend who thought, you know what, this is going to be great for you. And as we're talking and we're getting to know each other and you're pulling things out, you said to me, you do realize you say should and supposed to a lot.
A lot.
And I was like, what? Yeah. No, I don't.
Yeah.
And you said, no, you do. And you said it very matter-of-factly. You weren't being judgmental. You weren't being critical. You just stated it. And no one had ever said it to me. I had never acknowledged it. I had never paid attention to it. But it was true. And so then I basically ran away from you for a little while. I took some time.
It was a little chase.
It was a chase. You got to work hard for the good stuff, Reggie. I'm just kidding. But I did. I ran away. But part of my running away was, you know, I kind of had to step back and really unpack a lot of things and think about, you know what? Yeah, I do say that I should or I'm supposed to a lot. Why?
You know, and I'm so glad you shared that. And I think that is, in a lot of ways, what many people can connect with, is we are so deeply entrenched and managed by the shoulds and the supposed tos. And oftentimes it's not shoulds and supposed tos that we put on ourselves, but that we've built, that others have put around us. And what it blocks us from doing is just being free.
Yeah.
Just embracing who you are authentically and recognizing that things don't always happen as they should, or no one is the authority of you and should be able to tell you what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly people can inform and share mm-hmm. experiences that will inform your own decisioning.
Mm-hmm.
But the notion that you should walk around with this rule book that's basically a listing of all the things that people have said you should or supposed to,
mm-hmm.
those things just pile on and pile on and pile on. And when you come to a disruption like the one that you experienced and those things have failed you, like, what now?
That is exactly it.
And I think that's a really powerful and compelling message to be able to connect for people is, one, you're going to experience disruption. Disruption is kind of the poison pill that's buried in chains that really happens to everyone and everything. It's the only thing that's a constant is that nothing, you can count on nothing to stay the same. It's going to be changed. So disruption is going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's what you do with that disruption and how you face it, and recognizing this new reality that these shoulds and supposed tos didn't work.
Do not work.
And so now, what do you do?
So you just alluded to it a bit, right? You've got to rewrite the rules. And so for some of us, and I really greatly admire those people that, you know, say, I don't care what the rules are. The rules are made to be broken. And I think all of us have a little bit of that in us. But some of us, it feels like need more permission, if you will, to kind of break some of those rules. And for me personally, I had to rewrite the rules because the rule book I had played by for, you know, almost 40 years at that point, 40 some odd years, giving away my age. Is that okay?
It's all okay with me as long as you don't have the hang up.
I'm all right.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, those rules that I had played by for, you know, my life failed me. Every single one of them failed me. And it's not to say that they weren't good rules. And it's not to say that at some point there weren't, you know, some successes there, because there were. I mean, I've been really pretty successful in a lot of, you know, in most of my life. And I don't really have anything to complain about. But at the same time, I think about if I was not so focused on these constructs all this time, if I was not so focused on what everyone else maybe thought or what I thought everyone else thought I should be doing, how different would it be? And there is a freedom. There is a relief. There is kind of an unburdening, if that's even the right word, of feeling like, you know what, I don't really have another option except to figure out something else to do. So kind of trying to stay within the lines and color within, you know, stay within the boxes, it's hard. It's impossible. So you start thinking about, well, then what is possible, right? And so one of the things that I kind of live on a bit is, you know, thinking about what is possible, dwelling really, really, really comfortably in that space of possibilities. And so for me, the way the two mesh is, if I've got to rewrite the rules, then I've got to understand what's possible. Mm. And I've got to be comfortable in whatever those possibilities are, because the possibilities allow me to live. The possibilities allow me to be free. The possibilities energize me and give me life and give me energy and give me purpose and allow me to say to other people, personally and professionally, right now it is dark and cloudy and there are storms and there's somebody throwing rocks at you, and the person that's, you know, not throwing the rocks at you, there's somebody else that's, you know, there's a lot that's coming at you, but I promise you it's going to stop. It's going to, you know, clear up, it's going to slow down, it's going to open up, and you are going to be able to breathe, and you are going to be able to see yourself in a way that you have never seen, because in experiencing some of the loss and the disruption that I've had to learn to see myself in a way I had never before. I've always known I was strong, I've always known I was, you know, pretty bright, I could figure some things out, but I've also had to learn to understand some things about myself and be really okay with them, be really comfortable with them, embrace them in some cases and be like, oh yeah, that's pretty dope. And in other cases be like, that's crazy. What in the world were you thinking? Get rid of that. But you see yourself and you do it on your terms. You do it according to what fits and what feels right for you. And you stop asking opinions. You stop wondering what anyone else is thinking about. And I think one of the most important things I've learned is you learn no is a complete sentence. No. You don't have to give an explanation. You don't have to give an excuse. You just start to realize that in this space of me rewriting my own book,
mm-hmm.
and understanding that there are possibilities that I'm really, really comfortable dwelling in, I'm going to do this the way that I want to. And sometimes the way that I want to means saying no to all of these things and all of these people that are, you know, somehow pulling at me and not helping me be who I need to be.
That's so rich. And there's such compelling connectedness behind these themes of, you know, breaking out of the box of living by shoulds and supposed tos, you know, managing through disruptions that are inevitable, rewriting the rules, and learning this, you know, notion that no is a complete sentence. And like, it's almost like these are little, it reminds me of that book, The Celestine Prophecy, mm-hmm. where you kind of pick up these insights. Mm-hmm. These are like insights that kind of get you through. There's so much that we can unpack there. I think I want to just take a quick break for a moment and acknowledge the sponsor for our show today. But after this break, we'll be right back and we'll pick up where we left off. And from there, I'd love to talk about where you're going next with this.
Executive Producer Mel D, and thank you for tuning in. We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new, uplifting, and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalists, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn Fields, Less Stuff, More Meaningful Life, an up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels. And there's so much more. So get your subscription today at up2memagazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
Thank you. So this has been really good. And Janine, there's so many places we can go with this. But I really want to land the conversation that we started in a place that kind of helps us see what's on the horizon for you. And then I know that, you know, so we've had the opportunity to see you emerge as a speaker and pretty phenomenal speaker. I remember going through that experience and having your colleagues that were kind of going through that same experience with you acknowledge the really natural and organic gifts you have as a speaker, and then watching you go through that experience and begin to position, you know, working with our publicists for media placements, and now we're beginning to continue to do that. So that's one way that you're beginning to amplify this calling in terms of connecting these messages from shoulds and supposed tos to rewriting the rules, and what's on the horizon for the, you know, for that. I think there's so much more to come, and that we're only just now embarking on this journey to frame up this experience. And the reason why I'm really fascinated about what this work will unfold to look like for you is that that's just an uncanny dichotomy of an experience to be a change practitioner that's a professional at navigating change, to now take in what you've helped so many individuals and individuals, teams, and organizations work through and apply that in a way that helps them navigate that change on an individual basis that maybe not wasn't even a part of the scope and work that you were called to. Like, what, like, how do you work? How do you help people acknowledge these insights around shoulds and supposed tos and rewriting their own personal rules in a way that helps them get through these waves of change that are inevitable. So talk about, like, what, you know, the key messages you want to be able to share with people in terms of what's next for you.
A lot. You know, I'm still working through this process and really trying to understand what that is and wanting to be really thoughtful and about what I bring next, because I do think that because of what I'm talking about, because of what it is, it becomes really personal. But I don't think you can be effective, and I don't think you can really crack through the surface of what it is if you're not willing to be that open and not that transparent and that personal about it. And it's difficult, and sometimes when you are in the very quiet, you know, space, all by yourself, when you are not listening to anyone except yourself, you have to be really honest and open that. And I want to be able to maybe be a vehicle for people to express that. It is an interesting, it's almost a contradiction in a way, maybe not, but it's interesting that when I'm in professional spaces, working with clients, trying to get them to, you know, what's happening. A lot of the client leadership teams are talking about the things that, you know, their shoulds and their supposed tos. And, you know, we are supposed to be here in the market, do this with our employees, do this or that. And I have to break them out of those things as well. And says, well, who said you should? Did HBR say you should? Did the Wall Street Journal say you should? Did your competition say you should?
Wow.
Did your board say you should? Who said you should?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day, you have to think about the things that, you know, go back to why you do this every day. What's your vision? What's your mission?
Why do you come?
What's your why? Why do you do this every day? And if your why is in direct conflict with, you know, these shoulds and the supposed tos, something's got to give. And I think realistically, the shoulds and the supposed tos are governed by everybody else, right? Everybody else's opinion is, you know, that's what the shoulds and supposed tos are comprised of. But when you think about it, all the people that have what you need to do and what you should be doing, they're living their lives. They're doing their things. So professionally, they're running their businesses and leading their organizations. They're really not thinking about you day to day, but you're stressing and struggling because someone has told you this, right? This is what the leader is doing, so you should be doing it too. So, you know, I try to break that down.
So I kind of interrupted you a little bit there because I really would like for you to expand on this notion of thinking about your why.
Yeah.
And oftentimes in conversations, excuse me, that I'm working with either individuals or teams, I mean, we have this in common, is helping people understand this why, mm-hmm. connect their own personal why mm-hmm. to the why of the organization.
Yeah.
So, you know, imagine someone has been through this disruption that's occurred as a wave mm-hmm. of change, and they're at a point where they're rewriting their rules,
mm-hmm.
and part of their rewriting their rules has them answer this question, this profound question of why they're doing what they're doing and how that connects to the why for an organization. What would you say to somebody that's kind of in that place? Like, how would you guide them through thinking about that?
I think it's you have to ask the question. There's something, we do something every day. Each of us gets up every day, goes someplace and does something every day in the form of work, in the form of service, in the form of, you know, whatever it is to kind of fulfill their day, whether it's, you know, how they work, how they serve, how they teach, whatever they're doing something. But what's the why do you do it? And so a lot of times I found, and I was hit with this because people have asked me, I have a dear, dear friend who, you know, kind of reaches into the deepest places of my mind without me even realizing it. And her question to me is all the time, if I'm on a rant about something, she goes, but why do you feel that way? And so I've had to really sit back and figure out the but whys, and I've taken that into the conversations that I have. Definitely professionally and even more so personally as I start to kind of figure out what this, this, you know, rewriting the rules work is going to look like for me. So a lot of times people are not dismayed by the changes that are coming. The changes are going to come, but there's really often that underlying personal thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
It has really nothing to do. You're going to change my software system? I don't care. It doesn't really matter to me. But the why, what really is the issue is sometimes is, related to, will my job still be needed? Will I become obsolete? Or I don't have time to really go through all of these training courses because I'm kind of in that sandwich generation where I've got young children at home and parents that I'm caring for
mm-hmm.
and all of these other obligations. And so the stresses and the challenges that I uncover really are primarily geared towards personal things that have nothing to do with the change is coming, the disruption is coming, the business is going to change, all of that. But I work really hard to understand what else is going on. And so then I do ask the people, the teams, what is your why? Why do you do this? Why is this important? Why do you feel like you stayed in this organization this long? Why do you feel like you continue to serve on this committee? Why do you feel like you continue? So a lot of times the answers to the why is I've always done it. I was asked to because nobody else would. I don't know what else to do. My children are in this place or that, so this is the most convenient. So it takes a lot to sometimes get people to uncover what their whys are. And I'm often surprised at the other talents and gifts that I uncover when I talk with people about what their real why is. Because if you're not doing this, what would you be doing? If it's not going to be that thing, what else could it be? And those answers are always so interesting to me, because that's when people really get to their whys. But then, circling all the way back to the conversation, is, well, how come you're not doing that? Well, you know, I was supposed to, right? I should be. I majored in this. I got a job here.
Right. I met
this guy here. We started dating. We got married. We had a child. You know what I mean? So there are all these things that all fall back to those old constructs and those rules, the whys and the, you know, the shoulds and the supposed tos. And so you kind of fall into that and you stay in that space. And it's difficult, you know, for whatever reason to get out of it.
That's really powerful. I think that when a lot of people, you know, first of all, just acknowledge that answering this question of why is a very difficult thing for a lot of people. It's kind of, where do you start? How do you uncover it? And one of the things that we work through, and I think is really common with people that are working through this introspective space for themselves, is really conquering what I feel like is one of the greatest impediments to people's pursuit of purpose, and that's fear.
Mm-hmm.
And fear is a really powerful impediment, but for some people it's even a motivator. And I think it's really important. You know, what I have, it's interesting, because in the early years of helping people, you know, frame up purpose and build their strategies and then their plans and then begin execution, you know, there was a bit of an echo of people that didn't move wholeheartedly into the space of pursuing it, always had this fear, whether it was acknowledged or whether it was one that we didn't quite recognize, but it was still there. And it would not be denied. And I've always, you know, known or heard, or for me, it's always been helpful to understand that faith and fear can't occupy the same space at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And at any given time that you got a opposing percentage, if you will, of either faith or fear, and really kind of, and when you acknowledge what of that is fear, the beauty about fear is that as powerful of an impediment as it can be, it's also really simply reduced or eliminated by acknowledging it.
Mm-hmm.
So just the simple acknowledgement, I have a fear of failure. If this, my purpose is calling me to do something that feels like I've got a lot of work to move ahead in my career to do, or it feels like a really substantial pivot from where I am.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I oftentimes, you know, talk to leaders about the fear that they have around, you know, encouraging their own folks towards purpose, and the very real fear that, am I just giving them a ticket to leave if I, you know, encourage them to pursue their purpose? And I thought, you know, my response is always, well, what is it saying if you're afraid to develop them, you know, and allow them to flourish and continue to work for you in a place that they're not supposed to be? So this whole notion of using fear as a way to, you know, unpack the, you know, these, yeah, shedding your layers of skin of these shoulds and supposed tos, and then allowing you to rewrite your own rules based on why, I think is a really profound one. And it's one that I've been able to see, one, in you connecting the way that you, the work that you've done, to where you are right now, and where we're headed. You're laughing again.
I am laughing again, because I do realize that's sort of a shameless plug for the work you want me to do. I get it. We'll uncover that. But
I've never been ashamed.
You're not. You have no shame.
When I'm trying to build your
you
brand.
You have no shame. But, you know, but the fear thing is very real for me. And I laugh because I think you and I, you mentioned it earlier, it was a chase. You chased for quite a while because you kept saying, you know, you've got this great story. You've got to tell this story. Your story is awesome. And in my mind, I'm living my life,
mm-hmm.
right? I am just walking every day trying to stand upright and, you know, just kind of go through it. And some days it's awesome and amazing. And other days I'm like, what? I don't even understand. But in my mind, it's just, this is the life that, you know, again, I am supposed to live, right? I'm doing the things I should do.
Right.
So when you talk about this story that you're wanting me to tell, I'm like, yeah, Reggie, I don't know. This has just been my experience. But so there have been an element of one, Reggie, nobody really wants to hear this. but there's also been an element of, there has been a level of fear in terms of, okay, now what do I do? How do I do this? What do I do? Because I'm about to, you can't do this lightly. This is, this particular for me, this particular subject matter and this particular work is, it's all or nothing. So I can't go into it and say, I'm only going to reveal a little bit of myself. I'm only going to tell you a little bit of myself. I have to give everything I have because that's the only way to make it really true and authentic and engaging and incredible. And I think the other thing has been a bit of fear of, you know, I've always kind of been somewhat secure. At least I had been. I thought I was. I think the economy turning taught me differently, but I've always been kind of secure in having, you know, a traditional job, and nothing I'm talking about is traditional. And so there is an element of fear. I like living inside and eating on a regular basis.
Right.
So there is an
right.
element of fear related to, you know, is this sustainable? Is this something? But beyond that, I realize now more and more, and I've realized it a lot in the last several months probably, I think my bigger fear is if I don't do this. My bigger fear, and see, I've not said that to you.
Right.
My bigger fear is if I don't step into this. Even in casual conversations, I realize that this is something that is evident and, you know, it exists in so many people in so many different ways that they are doing the things that they feel like they must do, and they are reluctant to rewrite the rules and, you know, not exploring, not, you know, understanding what's possible, not figuring out what's out there and really living. And so I feel like I'm almost at a point of, you know, potentially doing a disservice if I don't explore it, if I don't take this somewhere. Now, it may go great. I may be, you know, on a bigger platform. Who knows?
Right.
I don't know. It may not go well. It may, but I won't know unless I do it. And I'm not interested at this point in letting the fear or the uncertainty dissuade me. I'm more interested in saying it out, talking about it, figuring out what those new rules are, and moving with it and trying to figure out, you know, how many other people are willing to rewrite their rules with me.
That kudos to just the acknowledgement of that. And I think what's really exciting about that is, you know, so we talked about speaking as being one of the places that it might be. And I see, you know, I could envision, you know, huge conferences.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I am. I can see big gatherings of people that are in, you know, commonly working through changes and disruptions and, you know, your message being really powerful and compelling way to work through rewriting rules. I also see, you know, do you see maybe with me a book on the horizon? Yes. Author.
Sure.
Author.
Sure.
Author rewriting the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
With a little bit
more conviction.
Yes,
that's on the horizon for you. You know, certainly I'm not just springing
You're
this
not.
Idea on him. This is
no,
what
this
you've
is,
already told me.
About
yes,
we
okay.
About
so don't act shy now.
Yeah, but, you know, we've talked about it. It's funny, though, as you're speaking, I'm thinking back to when we created my when we were first building my forte, when we were first composing, you know, when I was first going through the whole process, and realistically, everything pretty much that we're talking about right now is in there somehow.
It is.
You know, helping manage those perceptions and sharing this message. It's in there in one way, shape, or form, and you just kind of don't realize it. I mean, clearly you realize it, right?
Right.
But when you're going through the process and you're putting all this stuff down and you're peeling back the layers and exposing yourself, you don't realize at the time. I didn't realize. Let me not say. Some people get it immediately. For me, I didn't realize at the time what the progression was you know, where it was going to take me and where
right.
it was going to lead me. So,
right.
you know, I do, yes, I see it, you know, I see the speaking somehow. The writing is more of a work in progress, but we'll figure that out.
You know,
if that's what it, you know.
Blog post here, you know, a LinkedIn comment there. Next thing you know, you put it all together, you got a book, right? Yes. Oh, Zanita, it's so much fun trying to push you on the edges of your vision. So
I definitely go with it. I go with it. I am all the time, as much as I fight you, and I'll acknowledge, I fight it at every step. But every time you push me to do something, I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. Like this conversation this morning.
even this appearance.
Even this appearance. Was,
so,
yeah.
Well, I am so glad you did accept it. I will confess, I have figured out over the years, you know, that yes, I can push a little bit on the edge, and while you might not necessarily be comfortable but you will say yes, reluctantly say yes, and then you always go through it, and it was phenomenal. You go, man, that was great. Let me, what's next? So now that we're on the back end of this conversation,
yeah.
I'm sure you're saying, yeah, that was great. Now what's next? And
okay.
So we'll figure out what's
good.
Next, and we'll go there.
I appreciate you. I appreciate the fact that you somehow know that you sort of have to shame me in doing things, but it always works out.
I wouldn't say shame, but
yeah.
Yeah, but definitely a little
yeah.
nudge helps,
yeah.
for sure,
you
for sure.
But it is. I trust the process, and I'm learning more and more to not only trust the process, but to really kind of trust my voice
mm-hmm.
in the process and really figure out, you know, I've done all this stuff professionally, and it's been great. How do I then take all those, you know, things that have been packed in to that professional
mm-hmm.
toolbox and take them someplace else? And it's not to say that I would abandon the professional space,
mm-hmm.
but I think that more and more I am much more interested in what, you know, the individual stories are or the small group stories
mm-hmm.
are, and figuring out how those resonate to help people in terms of, you know, writing the rules and dwelling in that space. So
if someone is, you know, at a similar place to when we began working and they're trying to figure out what's next, then they're looking at this, the prospect of doing this Finding Your Forte experience, is like, what, you know, what would you say to them about your experience that might, you know, either help them figure out whether it's a process that's a good one for them?
Everybody has a time and a space wherein they work best, where they, you know, are able to think the most clearly, where they're able to, you know, kind of get their own thoughts out without distraction or disruption. For me, I find it's very, very early in the morning
mm-hmm.
or very, very late at night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the quiet space in the morning is where I have my loudest thoughts,
mm-hmm.
quite honestly. So I would say I think it helps to have someone to bounce something off of. But I think it's sit still and be quiet and listen to yourself and listen to your heart and listen to you. Just quiet your thoughts and write them down.
Mm.
I find a lot of times I'll have, you know, a number of different things just kind of running through my head. And if I can write them down or type them out or whatever, then it helps me to, there may not all be complete thoughts. They may just be, you know, words or phrases or things that I'm thinking about. But when I take the time to kind of go back to them, I do tend to find some commonality, and I can, you know, kind of get a stream of consciousness and figure out, okay, this is where I was. And so figure it out for yourself, kind of start piecing those things together, and then, you know, bring them to bear. So when you and I first started talking, I was scattered. I was all over the place, and it took a really long time, I think, for us to land on where we are now. But that was a process that I had to undertake. I had to be honest with myself. I had to really be committed to, you know, the exercise. And it's not like a, you know, hours a day sort of thing, but it was a be committed to figuring out what makes it okay for you
mm-hmm.
and be
mm-hmm.
honest and transparent about that and be willing to, you know, expose yourself, feel whatever emotion is going to come with it, because there is going to be emotion that comes
right,
with it.
Right.
And if you don't feel that, you've robbed yourself, I think, of some of it. And then just be open, right? Be open. Let someone push you. Like we talked about, you pushed me in a lot of ways. Be willing to kind of be pushed off the edge. You know, take that. Be pushed a little bit, but realize that you're going to land. You're going to land in a good place. You're going to be okay. Now, will you get scraped up and bruised and cry a little bit and, you know, bump your elbow and hit your head a little bit? You might.
Right.
You might.
Right.
You might. But you'll be a little bruised. You'll be a little bloody. You'll be a little scraped up. You may call you dirty names in the process. I don't know.
Right.
But you will. You'll be okay. You will stand and you will be better for it. You
wow.
will be, you owe it. I think we all kind of owe it to ourselves to understand what for us is going to make us okay. What is our own set of rules? And it might not be too many rules. It might be one or two, but you've got to be able to define for yourself what those rules are and go through the process of exploring them and writing them and figuring them out.
Well, Janine, we are going to leave it there. That is incredibly profound, and I really appreciate you spending the morning sharing it with us. I appreciate the opportunity to work with you. I thank you for the trust that you have in me and the process as we have been exploring and discovering this message and are now preparing to really kind of frame it up in a way that I think in a lot, it can really encourage and help other people. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And thank you for spending the morning with us. And, you know, with that, we will, you know, leave our listeners from our Finding Your Forte talk radio show. And with that, we would encourage everyone to have a prosperous day and week. And remember to continue to find your forte, compose your masterpiece, and play your crescendo.
Into reality, I'm thinking one more time.